In Tennessee, one family has single-handedly preserved a trove of songs that otherwise would have vanished. And some of these old folk ballads will be sung on stage in Nashville this weekend for the first time in generations. WPLN's Tony Gonzalez introduces us to the Hicks family.
A song can go extinct. Lose track of the words, say if no one ever wrote them down, or the tune by which to sing them, and the oral tradition of folk music becomes precarious. But one family, even singing amongst themselves in a remote area, can do a lot of good.
Well, I was going to sing you that odd little song. Daddy would sing it to us at night.
This is Carmen Hicks McCord, age 63, part of a long-running ballad-singing family.
Oh, the old sow rose up one morning, and she found herself and six pigs dead. She said, come, oh, my poorest little pigs, it's time for us to move our bed. Since death has come among us, here we cannot stay. Come, my poorest little pigs, it's time to move away. That's an odd song, isn't it?
She's practicing in her living room in Bonacqua, an hour west of Nashville, in front of Bob Fulcher, a living legend in music preservation. He's invited her to sing this rare lullaby as part of a concert of extraordinary traditional musicians.
This piece from the Hicks is not known with this completeness anywhere in American folk song literature. I've never found another fragment of it, but the Hicks have it as this very strange lullaby.
In many ways, it embodies Carmen's remarkable upbringing in rural Fentress County in East Tennessee. She knew hardscrabble farm life.
We finally did get running water. I think it was the year I was 10 or 11. But we usually had to heat it on the stove to wash the dishes.
And she lived a life of music, largely from her father, Bessford Hicks, who knew the words to hundreds of songs, many going back generations to the family's frontier days and back to Europe. Fulcher, as a young ranger at a state park, met the Hicks family in the late 1970s, realized all the words and tunes they knew, and began the urgent project of making field recordings.
Okay, let me just first off say this is, what, December the 9th, 1979. Bobby Fulcher.
Fulcher says these songs survived because they were so ingrained into everyday life. Like that lullaby. Carmen says her father would sing it before bed during winter months while warming a quilt over a coal stove.
And he would sing that, and then he would wrap our feet in that blanket and carry us up where we didn't have any heat to put us to bed when we were little.
And that's how she'd learn, through repetition and through these memorable associations of this loving and sensitive father.
And if something was bothering you, he would know it. And he might put his arm across the back of your shoulders and sing to you then. But I think that was part of his way of comforting us, too.
In her father's final year, he got some of the songs down on paper. One of them, in neat cursive, is called The Cumberland Land. It's also one of the few ever recorded by Bessford on a single cassette tape.
And I get chill bumps when I listen to it. So, I mean, I just still love the old music. And probably always have.
The day I parted away from you, in sorrow, grief, and in trouble too.
Yeah, the first time I heard it, I cried.
Likely written in 1789, it recounts explorers coming to Nashville, known then as the Cumberland Land.
Oh, I took the steering in my hand, and we steered our way to the Cumberland Land. But when we got here, it was ice and snow. It rained, it hailed, and the wind did blow, which caused us all for to weep and cry, thinking here with cold we all must die.
Fulcher beams as she sings.
A song that is only here because of the Hicks family, the only reason it's left, about the frontier Nashville. It's like an eyewitness account. It's like a news flash that's coming across here. But that will be sung in Nashville. I don't know if it's been sung there in the past 200 years.
I was not aware that it was a rarity, but now I am, and I'm really glad that we've got it.
an old song, once hanging by a thread, but saved by a Tennessee family that loved music and one another. For Nashville Public Radio, I'm Tony Gonzalez.
Carmen Hicks McCord will perform Saturday night at TPAC with a wide array of traditional musicians, including the internationally known guitarist Scotty Anderson.
The World Cup only comes around every 4 years, so this is the first time that Plaza Mariachi in South Nashville has been able to throw viewing parties for the games. The multicultural shopping mall resembles a Mexican village inside and centers around a theater-sized food court. That's where hundreds have been coming out for games, even early on weekday mornings. WPLN's Tony Gonzalez was in the crowd this week as Brazil defeated Mexico, and he brings us this audio postcard.
So this has been very exciting to see how packed we can get it. Like right now, I think we probably have well over 1,000 people in here. We had to rent chairs just to make sure everyone had a seat, and still people were standing.
Normally I just watch at home, but now I come in here. This is the second time I've been coming here.
So I showed up in my Brazil flag dress. I mean, it's 9 o'clock in the morning and we are turned up, so this is great.
Estamos viniendo aquí a Plaza Mariachi porque la pantalla está grande, la instalación está bonita.
Lots of dancing, lots of singing, lots of drumming, lots of flags waving.
Está en cuarto de final, la última de la Jun.
There's a lot of good people around here. We enjoyed so much to come here. It's, even if we Brazilians, we play against Mexico, but we at the end, we all friends in one community.
The voices in that story were Plaza Mariachi owner Diane Johnbash, Darwin Alvarez, Jana Lindblom, Fernando Guerra, and William Kawai.
A Nashville preservation group has the go-ahead to relocate and restore a famed locomotive that has idled in Centennial Park for 65 years. The 1940s steam engine has drawn visitors and been featured on country music album covers. But WPLN's Tony Gonzalez reports the intent is to get it chugging again for tourism trips between Nashville and Watertown.
Locomotive 576 made for a nice photo backdrop, but preservationists say a steam engine can show industrial power in motion.
You see the sights and you hear the sounds of various tools and appliances chuffing and steaming and exhaust kind of going everywhere. And it's really a sensory experience.
That's Joey Bryan, spokesman for the Nashville Steam Preservation Society, which has raised $500,000 toward what will be a gritty, labor-intensive restoration. Bryan knows firsthand after helping with recent cleanings.
And I came out looking, you know, like I just walked out of a coal mine of the 1940s.
When running, the train carried World War II supplies and then passengers between Nashville, Memphis, Chattanooga, and Atlanta. But to leave Centennial Park, it'll need some help. A heavy transport company will haul it 2 miles to get it back onto tracks. Then preservationists need to raise at least another $1 million for repairs. For WPLN News, I'm Tony Gonzalez.
The train's relocation is scheduled for January 13th and will require some street closures along Charlotte Avenue.
One of the lingering disagreements over Nashville's transit plan is how it would impact development along proposed new light rail and rapid bus corridors, and if it will increase the gentrification already happening. Here to unpack this intertwining of transit and affordable housing is WPLN reporter Tony Gonzalez. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Jason.
So why has affordable housing become such a hot topic around a vote that is ostensibly about transit?
Well, where transit lines run absolutely ties into development patterns and property values. And I don't think the city is shy about saying that this plan would reshape parts of Nashville, both in terms of, you know, mobility, how people get around, and development. At the very least, the plan fits in with Metro's preference recently to concentrate development along more dense corridors, you know, basically saying that there haven't been many options ever in Nashville for neighborhoods where you can live easily without a car and hop on and off transit. And city planners say that without density in some areas, people might have no choice but to live farther out, own a car, and add to road congestion. We're also talking about this because a rift has formed between groups that otherwise might be allies in favor of the plan. So you've got pro-transit people and pro-affordable housing advocates who aren't in agreement.
So what we're talking about here is gentrification. And our listeners have submitted several questions about this, like would new transit service push more lower-income people out of town?
Right. This is the fear. People have certainly been getting priced out of some parts of Nashville for many years, and transit could accelerate that. You know, there's clear evidence from other cities that property values spike along transit lines. And the hang-up for some voters is whether Nashville will take the steps to mitigate, you know, what otherwise might be inevitable. I want you to hear from an advocate named Austin Sauerbry. He helps low-income tenants defend their rights, renters' rights. He's part of a group called the PATH Coalition. They're not explicitly for or against the proposal, but they definitely have been hounding the mayor's office for months to write some housing policies to go along with the transit plan. So here he is.
If we don't have very concrete anti-displacement policies in place, if we don't have the dedicated funding source for low-income and affordable housing in place before we start building these light rail lines, it will spell mass displacement for folks along those corridors.
His group was also on the mayor's affordability task force, which made some non-binding recommendations. They want policies like dedicated funding for low-income housing and some guarantees that some of the new development that would come along these transit lines would be affordable for middle-income and low-income families so that they could actually use the transit afterward.
Also, has the city really ignored this concern?
The criticism from some is that the city hasn't formally adopted the right housing policies. You know, they say they've heard promises. For example, Mayor David Brierley put out a video pretty clearly trying to speak to these groups, and he made some pledges. But the pushback is that the ideas aren't in writing or moving toward Metro Council approval, all except for one policy, which is called transit-oriented development districts.
So I've heard that term. Practically speaking, what does that mean?
Basically, in these districts, the city would draw a zone around some or many of the light rail and rapid bus stations. In those pockets, the city could set some extra rules and use tax increment financing as an incentive for developers to build affordable units. And really, it could be more of an incentive than Nashville has ever seen before for housing. Developers could get some of that financing by including affordable units and agreeing to keep prices low for 30 years. Last year, the Barnes Affordable Housing Fund, which is talked about a lot, they gave out $10 million in grants to developers across the entire county. By comparison, $10 million could go into the first transit district that's being considered right now in Donelson, and that's just for a one-mile stretch. So if you kind of imagine that amount of money along all of these transit lines and more transit stops, that's why transit backers think that this method could create a lot more affordable housing than any other tool we've got. Here's Councilman Bob Mendez. He's one of the architects behind these transit districts.
We will have a tool to address affordability that should be valuable and powerful in trying to head off a deeper crisis on affordability.
It's worth noting that Councilman Mendez had a lot of questions about how transit would impact affordability, but he's now in favor of the plan largely because of these districts. He says that these alone could make Nashville different from all those other cities with light rail that did see more gentrification. You know, the way he sees it, people are getting priced out now, more growth is coming, and these districts could make a difference. I'm not sure this policy has gotten a lot of attention, but it is the kind of thing that some of these voters will be weighing as they decide.
Well, thank you, Tony.
You're welcome.
Tony Gonzalez is covering the transit referendum before Election Day on Tuesday. All of our coverage of the transit plan is online in one spot at WPLN.org/transit.